Today on our show,
we're counting down the top 10 train films of all time in honor of listener Ben and his father.
Choo choo, son! Hit it, Polly.
Not sure we needed you to your company.
Are you kidding me? That was the third backup voice everyone wanted. And by everyone, I mean no one.
You mean me. You, not me.
Welcome to episode, Paulie.
473.
473 of the Countdown Podcast. My name is Wayne.
No, 474.
474 of the Countdown. You can see.
At least I was within one.
I think you're just great. Like, I didn't know what I could have said. 327. So anyway, yes, my name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast where we can't count.
No doubt.
As well as Countdown stuff in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. Movies, TV shows, sometimes songs, sometimes other things like travel experiences we did last week.
I bet you that tanked.
Today. I haven't looked at the numbers, to be honest.
There you go.
Today, Ben Burn, listener, let us know that trains was one of his father's favorite things, and he sadly passed away. So he said, hey, how about you do, in honor of me and my dad, top 10 train films? And we thought, why the fuck not?
Hell, that sounds
like a wonderful way to honor a listener to the show. So that's what we're doing. And we're dead keen to hear what you think, which is going to happen at the end, which I want to say big thanks to everyone who did respond, because I only put that out about 90 minutes before we started recording.
Which is like and gangster and awesome.
Shit ton of responses. So thank you to everyone who happened to be awake at either 2 a.m. in the States or here and on the line in the afternoon of Saturday today.
Damn right.
Before we go any further though, Wayne, we need to put to bed some business from 2 weeks ago when Chef Ben Randall from the In the Weeds podcast was on the show and we counted down the top 10 film in food scenes. Here's what the good folk had to say on the other side of well, this stinger to start it.
Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap?
Sing me your song of the internet, Paul.
Well, this is just the feedback, as I said, from that particular episode in terms of the votes. Who had the best list of food in film scenes? 32 votes received. So relatively low. People didn't quite get onto this one as much maybe as they had before. Does mean that we have a new record low ever on the show, Wayne. And that record low is shared by both you and I because we both got 3 votes each.
3 votes!
Out of 32, meaning that Chef Ben got 26 votes comprehensive a shellacking that this show
has ever recorded.
Some of the feedback there from...
fingered.
Luke Alexander, I think, voted for me because he had a big gif of and then Ashton Kutcher going mad. There. Smiley Smarty made to us said, voting for Wayno simply because, one, if he wins, huge upset. He didn't. Nice try, Smiley. And number two, Paulie's head will explode.
Fair enough. You know, it's funny.
Chef Ben did have the best list, though.
When you do so poorly that you get 3, you can actually identify the 3 people. You know, so there you go.
David Powell. One of the hosts of the We Watch the Thing podcast and now one of the co-hosts with my good self of the Time to Die D&D playing podcast, which has dropped. Now. If you want to get involved in the show there on the Potty Mouth Radio Network, please do. A couple episodes out at this particular time. David Powell said, disappointed Ben didn't have Tampopo. If you haven't seen it and enjoy Light Water for Chocolate, this is like the funnier, zany Japanese sister to that movie. There you go.
Okay.
Jennifer Manson. Said, loved Ben's honor mention for Babette's Feast. A hard slog to watch, but the food is pure love. Great show, lads.
What?
And lastly then, here from Josh Ragland, patron of the show, said, Chef Ben wins, duh, because I love to hear someone as knowledgeable as he is talk about something he is so passionate about.
Hell yeah.
Thank you again to Chef Ben. Thank you to everyone who voted there. That's it for the recount today. Let's get into the episode proper. And I should lead away, I reckon, this week, boy.
First of all, tell me how was your burger after that episode? Was it a good one? Was it average?
Yeah, we might have made the mistake having one delivered in, which wasn't as good as it could have been.
Yeah, you got to go to the source, but please keep going.
So it's a good lesson for everyone. Don't be lazy. Go and get it yourself. Sometimes they're not an option, though, if you've had a few drinks, let's put it that way. All right, so this week then, because normally we do something extravagant like this.
Top 10 train movies.
Choo-choo. The topic of this week's countdown.
Okay.
I'm leading away with my number 10. I only had 10.
Hit it.
I only had 10. My number 10 is, am I happy with this list? My number 10 is Unstoppable.
Oh, you're going to be happier than with my number 10. Oh, by the way, low. Unstoppable's
good.
Unstoppable, solid. I don't remember a whole heap about it, which is why it falls down to this particular level.
Now, you speak, of course, of Chris the Tony Pine, Scott one. Yes, the Chris Pine, Denzel
film is basically a runaway train. It's a whole bunch of deadly toxic chemicals on it, and it's barreling down towards somewhere in Pennsylvania. So Dan Brennick's part of the world and proves to be unstoppable until a veteran engineer, which has to be, of course, Denzel, and a young conductor, which has to be Chris Pine, risk their lives to try and stop it with a switch engine.
Now, see, here it is. When I saw and heard of this movie, I'm like, is this a runaway train film? Which may not be. I'm just saying. Okay. Then I'm like...
This one is what? 2010.
10. Might have been interesting. I'm like, this is boring. So then I go watch it, and it turns out, well, because the train is full of toxic chemicals and it would absolutely obliterate like an environmental disaster kind of shit, I actually found it oddly nail-biting. I'm like, this is actually quite good, actually. And then even like Denzel and him being like, the whole like veteran, I'm a what's up dude, and yeah, this is how we do. That was actually quite good. So I was not expecting it to be good, but somehow it was.
I remember bits and pieces, but not enough to be like, yeah, this was great. I think it was a fine film, but that's as good as it
gets. Again, it should have been a shit film. But then Tony Scott. Because Tony Scott had game, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Great director. Yeah, the claustrophobic close-up shot of the face. Yes. That's the Tony Scott staple.
Yes, that's the Tony Scott. Yeah, exactly. Nice one. All right.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see how it goes for you. Yes. There might be a lot of crossover on this list today.
There'll be tons. You know why? And this is the thing.
There aren't that many.
Yeah, there are very few movies that
I didn't
just
put Trainspotting on here or anything like that.
Well, that actually doesn't ironically have much train.
No, it doesn't. But my point is I didn't try and play cutesy. I played proper train film.
Okay, so just so we can get this out before Paul puts his foot in my fanny.
Oh,
right?
In that case, let's get the soundboard ready.
Yeah. If indeed the movie is not entirely about trains or set on trains, I have chosen also films with a significant train scene or theme about trains on it. But Paul,
I guess
you'll
we have to play this.
You'll be happy to know that I didn't put the girl on the train on the list.
Oh, fuck that movie.
Because I love that movie, all right?
Shit.
But she only saw shit from the train. The real action happens off the train. So yeah, significant train or scene or montage, okay? All right, here we go.
There may be one or two on my list that aren't entirely set on a train as well.
No. How many fucking movies are entirely set on a train?
Oh, entirely, mostly.
Exactly.
Mostly.
So here we are. Okay. My number 10, and I'm sorry about this, everyone, but it's Under Siege 2. now, before Paul's vagina explodes, right?
No!
I will tell you
that... No.
Shut up, fuck knuckles, badge, ass wipe. You know what? I'm happy I put it on now. Fuck you. All right? Tit fuck. Anyway.
Well, that was going to be a Daryl Linton special there.
No, you're thinking dick tit. Dick tit, dick tit. So... It's something that they went around our high school. People used to call each other dick tits every now and then.
One guy called people dick tits, but it caught on. Then we all caught on because we were laughing at him so much.
Yeah. Okay. So look, I know we're not fans of Steven Seagal on this show. All right.
Are we not? I should have done a Steven Seagal watch today. Yeah, I forgot.
We hate the cunt, right? So he's a dickhead.
I am now convinced, however, though, Wayne, that you could beat him in a fight after watching him mumble his way through clearly drug-addled/drunken moment on the Instagram reel someone posted to the Facebook listening committee chat during the week
from Russia.
Yeah, basically, as a bit of a propaganda machine for Putin. Oh, I've already said Putin is the greatest leader in the world.
Fucking dickhead. Oh, anyway, all right, let's try and put that aside because when we were youngsters,
we shouldn't because this film fucking sucks.
Yeah, all right, here it is, right? So Under Siege, the original one. Before we knew who he was, Paul, we quite enjoyed that movie. It was a great film.
Great film.
And to be fair,
Mark for Death,
fucking, what's the other one?
Hard to Kill.
Yeah, Bomber Cloud. But when we didn't know him, all right, and even during Under Siege 2, we didn't know him. We just assumed, for some reason, he had to have some appeal, otherwise he wouldn't have been an action star.
Why does he keep getting cast?
Exactly. So, I see this film, and essentially...
I'll tell you why. It's because he's in the CIA.
Yeah, or something like that. And now, this film here is... I remember looking at it going, okay, well, so it's Under Siege on a train. Which, frankly, back in 1980, whenever it was, I was on board for.
Did you... 80s, it was the 90s.
Was the 90s?
Did you refer to it by its proper name, Under Siege 2, Dark Territory?
No, I did not, Paul. Now, remember, in this film here, Casey Ryback, who is the dude, right, is the Steven Seagal. His niece, who is Katherine Heigl, as a child, was, like, you know, she was in trouble. There was, there was a popular African-American actor in it. I can't remember his name.
Glenn Powell?
No. Glenn Powell? He's white.
Oh, no. It's Glenn something.
It's something. It's something. But the bad guy.
It's not like you've got this film on your list and you'd have details.
I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but the bad guy is Eric Bogosian, and he's starring as a bad guy. Okay, and it is typically an early '90s movie, which I quite liked because Steven Seagal was still actually busting ass in this film. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not as good as Under Siege, okay?
Oh, Morris Chestnut.
Morris Chestnut. There it is. That's the guy. But what was interesting about it, or funny about it, I should mention, was that it was a tech movie in the 90s. Like, this guy, the bad guy, is threatening to fuck people up with his fucking Windows fucking CE tech shit on the train.
Have you seen the poster for this movie?
With him hanging out
on
the
side of the train with the most crappy CGI.
Oh, yeah. It was the 90s.
It's as good as the movie.
Dude, forget about it. There's a scene in this film where, this is hilarious, all right? There's the government guy tells, like, you know, the government agent gal says, don't worry, the bad guy couldn't possibly set off his bomb or his thing because he has to enter both passwords at the same time.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right? And I'm like, he has like 10 guys at least on the train. Can he not just say, when I type in fuckoff.69, can you fucking type it in as well? But he doesn't even do that, Paul. He does this. He puts the two keyboards next to each other and goes, watch this. And then his hands blur over both keyboards as he types two passwords in at a time, as though that was some kind of a thing, right? It's full of shit like
whoa,
that.
Whoa, 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 whoa,
and so you
on.
Might argue that I'm ironically liking it, but I would whoa. Also argue that your soundboard sucks. Fat, fat, veiny cock, fuck off. So, yeah, I think this is actually, I actually had a good time at the time. I've not seen it again. Let's be clear on that. I've not seen it again since the 90s, and I'm not watching it again. But yeah, I had kind of a good time at it, and let the chips fall where they may.
Yep, Judge Wayne, but plenty for that one. My number 9 is a horror film from director Ryu Kitamura. It's called The Midnight Meat Train. And it's
I knew you'd have this on your list.
It basically follows it's got your man, everyone's man these days, Bradley Cooper.
Brad Coop?
Yeah.
Huh.
And he stars as a photographer who manages to stumble across seeing someone get murdered on
a... Is this a white people movie?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, but it's a Japanese director.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah. And he's killing late night commuters on subway trains.
Right.
I can't remember. I assume it's in New York because that's where every famous subway train ever is.
Sure.
And yeah, it's a surprisingly gory and over the top horror film.
So it's
film.
A horror film, yeah. And absolutely. Bradley Cooper is the protagonist.
And from memory, it's based on a Clive Barker short story. So it gives you some sense of how fucked up things can get in this particular film. By the way, David Leitch did some directing on this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Is Brad Cooper the protagonist?
He is. He's a good guy in the film.
And do we...
Although the film at one stage wants you to believe that maybe he's the one committing the murders.
No, I'm fine with that. And also, do you... you do finally find out who the bad guy
is? Yeah, Vinnie Jones.
Vin Jones?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I've not actually seen him play the straight bad guy before. He's always a cockney gangster.
With a big like mallet just laying into people and murdering them and blood everywhere. And yeah.
Can you tell me how he gets dispatched?
No, can't remember that much about the film.
Ah, yeah. See, this is the thing about
2008, 16 years ago, this particular film. There you go.
Fair
film.
Enough.
But I do remember enjoying it at the time. It's a neat 98 minutes in and out. Nothing. Look, this is not change of life material. I think I gave this 3 stars. So
tell me a train movie that is change your life material.
I've got one.
So do I. Okay. My number 9 is going to be contentious because this movie was contentious, okay? People got pissy about it, and I went to see it. I was not pissy about it. I, in fact, enjoyed it despite thinking I might get pissy about it. It's Back to the Future 3.
Oh, yeah.
So...
That's a fair choice.
Well, here's
not
what
my favorite, but I know people love it.
I get it, but like, here's the thing: it's so starkly different from 1 and 2. All right, where it's city bound and 80s and Mike and look at my nice sneakers and shit. That for them to swing and go, all right, the third one's going to be a cowboy movie.
Pivot,
exactly. And then I'm like,
shout out to my brother,
because remember now, I went to like, I was the guy who saw Back to the Future 2, much like your daughter, except I was alone in the cinema. And when it said to be continued, I went, fuck off, because I was younger. I was younger back then.
She didn't say that. She goes, what? That's the worst ending ever.
Yeah, that's what a nice child would say. I was like, fuck off. Right?
Also, you weren't around mum and dad at the time.
This is true. Yeah. I was in the room by myself. And I walked out actually going, what? And I almost spiked my popcorn. I didn't. All right. But then so finally when this one comes around, and I'm like, oh, because actually they gave a little teaser to it at the end of Back to the Future 2. Coming 1990 is motherfucking... And then it's like...
This is the first film I remember, series of films I've shot back to back.
Yes.
2 and 3.
That's right.
Which again is... odd then, whether they, mixed scenes and whatever else between them. But they'd written 3 before they'd finished, along with 2. And they made that decision then. It wasn't like they went, oh, we're bored of doing the future. They were like, let's do the future and then let's do the past.
Yeah, and I remember what happened was Steven Spielberg said he always wanted to make a Western. And they were like, okay, let's do this then. And
time's running out, Steve.
No, this is it. He did it.
Does it count as a Western?
It absolutely does, Paul. There's a lot of Buford fucking, you know, shoot you down like a duck. You know, that kind of thing. that's dog, Buford. So this was all like, when they gave the teaser to it at the end of that film, I'm like, he's like, choo-choo, go back to the fucking 1800s with Doc Brown and your mother Snatch and so on and so on and so on, right? And I'm like, what? Are they doing cowboys?
I'll tell you what, when I say you're, I don't mean you're, but I mean, quote unquote, your mother Snatch goes a lot of places in your
one's
world.
One's mother Snatch, shall we say? Let me tell you, Paul, I've seen a few mother Snatches. Now, if you didn't know it was going to go this way,
moving
but you
on.
Had an idea that it would. Anyway, sorry, long story short, I liked a lot of it. I actually enjoy Westerns because six shooters are cool. When you fan the fucking of a fucking gun, that's cooler than a fully automatic weapon if you can aim it. But other than that,
it makes it certainly more of a skill, right?
Fantastic. Yes. And also, did you know how horrible life was for people who were cowboys? You couldn't even get clean drinking water, Paul. And also, apparently
people
no
didn't
one
lived to be 40.
Right. And no one smiles in photos. It's fucked. Anyway.
Because they had no teeth.
That's true.
Which to smile.
That's true. Would have been a horrible time. Anyway, there you are. Back to the Future Part 3 was my number 9.
My number 8 is, I think, the oldest film on my list. It is a pretty cool war film from 1965, the second half of which basically takes place on a train. Mm. It's Von Ryan's Express.
Ah, no, I've not seen it.
Frank Sinatra.
Frank.
Is the star is Ryan, and he gets derogatively called Von Ryan by one of his fellow captives at one point, because it's a prisoner of war film. They're captured. It's during World War II. And he leads this group of ragtag sort of survivors in this prisoner of war camp to get away from the Germans. And they eventually do so by commandeering a train and trying to pass themselves off as Germans.
Ah.
Hence Von Ryan's Express.
Yeah. Have you seen a lot of Frank Sinatra's acting work?
Look, I don't remember the film being wonderful for acting. I remember
but it's
surprising for what it's prepared to do in a war film. Like some of these, you think back to these sort of rollicking good time kind of, which of course it wasn't, but the they're cats. Adventure films like Where Eagles Dare and Force 10 from Navarone.
Yeah, that's right.
This falls right into that zeitgeist for me as well, and that it's a good time adventure film set with some harsh shit going on. But most of those films, while I don't want to give this film away, sort of what happens at the end, it doesn't pull punches. Let's put it that way.
What year was it, do you think?
65.
65.
That's only 20 years after the end of World War II.
That's the thing. You can actually sort of do a lot of crap back then. Like, 70s movies are harsh, some of the shit that happens.
Well,
65 is even worse, you know? So it's like, it's funny. Frank Sinatra, he was a mobster. That's the whole thing, right?
So the story goes.
Don Rickles said this really great one time. He said, you know, Frank Sinatra once saved my life. He's doing this, like, this presentation at the Oscars or something. He's like, I was getting the crap kicked out of me and people were stepping on my head. And Frank said, okay, he's had enough. That's pretty good stuff.
That's a good joke.
Not bad.
Good joke. Look, I understand. Is it Matt Damon or is it DiCaprio who's playing Frank Sinatra in a biopic?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we'll get to see how much they're going to explore about that.
You know who sings Frank Sinatra songs really well and did so for a movie? Tom Berlinson. The man from Snowy River sings Frank Sinatra perfectly.
And, ironically, the man from Snowy River Part 2.
If you're Australian, you know what that movie is. If you're American, you should not bother, no.
Yeah. Anyway, Von Ryan's Express, my number 8.
Nice one. My number 8, Paul's probably going to be pissed about this, but the last act of this movie turns up on a train, literally is on a train. It is Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows. I fucking love this film. I love both Sherlock Holmes
I don't
films.
Understand.
Yo, brilliant, okay? It involves, this particular part of the movie involves Watson and his new wife, Kelly Riley, who am I a big fan of. They're in a carriage.
She's the one from Yellowstone?
Hey?
Is she the one from Yellowstone?
Yeah, that's her. Yeah. Gorgeous. Gorgeous Ranger. And her, I know
thing.
Paul doesn't like Rangers, okay? She's in a carriage with Watson and they're having their, you know, whatever, their honeymoon or whatever. Bad guys get in there disguised as a porter, tries to knife them both. Then he like fucking, you know, Robert Downey Jr. turns up dressed as a woman, throws Kelly Riley off the train into the water safely, but then Watson's pissed about it. And then it becomes like a proper shootout, boom, 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 like with an actual brand gun. He sticks shit in there. Like, it's really, really cool. And Watson fires a gun at someone's arm. He drops a grenade into a box of another grenades and the entire train blows up. It's actually a wonderful scene. And I actually
watched it very once.
No, this is the thing though, right? Because there's another supposed Sherlock Holmes coming, not Guy Ritchie directed. Is that
I do not know. No, I don't think I've heard that.
I heard a story about that and I'm really here for it. So I love both these films. I think
the first one was better.
Well, here's what happened in Game of Shadows, all right? The first one was probably better, but like the Game of Shadows is actually... there's a famous Sherlock Holmes, the last Sherlock Holmes, whatever that he wrote, is called The Final Something. And
he falls off a waterfall.
Yes, yeah. But this movie does that, but in their way. It's really, really cool. So, yeah, one guy talking. I'm sure no one likes this movie but me.
It's got some fans. But yeah, look, you've got a contentious list so far, Wayne.
It's going to be
gone. Keep it up.
All right. You're number seven, Paul.
My number seven, here's where I've gone as loose with the brief as I'm going to in this whole... Actually, not the oldest film on this, by the way. But this is from a series of films, Wayne, which we are particularly enamored with. Hmm. I think you may even be more enamored with them than I am.
Go on.
And there's another one coming next year.
What?
It's Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
Low. The entire end of this movie is train, Paul.
Or the last 30 minutes or so is, yes.
Yeah, that's fine, Paul. Yeah. Again, unless you got some 3-hour train movie for my ass, this is good. This is fine. And also it's low. Tell me.
The only reason why I had it so low is because I thought it wasn't as much train action as there are in all my other list entries.
The actual shit they did with the train in this film, Christopher McQuarrie, He says,
That's McHugh to you.
Well, that's what he has always been calls him, McHugh. But he said, we just shouldn't have done it. We should not have done this train scene because it was so fucking hard to shoot.
I wonder if the next one has a considerably smaller budget after how much this one tanked.
But didn't they shoot them all? Oh, they didn't.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, you know what happens? Remember when, before the Rona, before anything, years ago, I'm thinking like, for real, it feels like 10 years ago. I remember posting on our webpage a shot of someone had taken from a train in wherever they were. Of Tom Cruise sitting on top of another train, obviously filming this movie.
Right.
It was fucking years ago, bro. Yeah. And it finally turns up like, you know, basically last year, this year, whatever, right? And
Last year,
right? They were going to blow up this bridge for real. So this is pretty impressive, right? And then the word got out that they were going to blow up a historic bridge and everyone chucked a shit. So then they had to find another bridge. Can you imagine being the location guy for this film? Can you find us a bridge to blow up?
Sure. Oh, shit. Because bridges aren't there for any reason.
Exactly. And so I'm like, okay. And then so if you look at the stuff they did for this film where they're hanging off the thing and he's going.
Oh, that whole sequence where they're dangling, they're falling, they're grabbing. And it could have gotten over. It could have been too much, but somehow they found the exact right balance. Absolutely. It's thrilling. It's excellent. It's easily the best scene in the film. And for me, almost it saves that movie, which was threatening to be derailed.
Oh, fuck off. I loved that film. I'm really pissed that it didn't do as well because of Barbenheimer. But like it
wasn't because of Barbenheimer.
It was Barbenheimer took all of its money, Paul. If that was alone without fucking hanging out with all of that shit, it would not have done as well. That's right. It would have done way better, is what I'm saying.
It was out before those two films,
wasn't it? It's like in the same sort of like release cycle, okay? Because they asked Tom Cruise about it, and he said, hey, a rising tide, you know, all ships. He said, I don't care if everyone does well. I'm going to see Barbie then. I'm going to see Oppenheimer.
Yeah, that was well played.
Yeah. I mean, like, the next one is part two, right?
Yeah. Dead Reckoning, part two. I think it's next year. I think it's slated for middle of next year.
Fair enough. Look, the Mission Impossible like whole franchise is one of my favorites of movies everywhere. So there you are.
Look, I don't disagree. We'll see how high it goes on your list. Your number seven, sir.
Nice one. My number seven, Paul, is Batman Begins. Again.
This is very loose, this one.
Fuck you, the whole
thing.
The whole movie, right? The whole point of the
this
movie.
This is looser than Wayne's morals.
Bitch, I'm saying to you, right, that the entire plot of Ra's al Ghul's thing is to put that train through Gotham at the end and fuck up all the shit with all the fucking microwave bullshit, whatever. Like, that's the whole thing.
Make the water
all... Yeah, it dissipates all the water, right? Yeah. So, and then the entire thing of the... here's the thing about it. Apart from the fact that it's all trainy at the end and, yeah, okay, make the call. But that was the one bit where Batman... And remember now, this is the Christopher Nolan when it came out doing Batman. I can't believe it. I'm lobbying for Christian Bale to be Batman because he looks like Bruce Wayne. Fine with me. Word. This was actually, like, it gets lost because of The Dark Knight being supposedly the world's best movie at one stage. And it's better than fucking Rises.
Oh,
better than Rises,
that's
right?
The worst film in that trilogy by a mile.
Yeah. And so here's the thing, though, right? When Batman Begins comes out, it's one of the few movies that actually tackles the Bruce Wayne Batman character element. The Batman, the Robin.
Yeah, I just don't know how much has to do with trains.
The whole last act is a train slot, and you're asking what's the best train-ish movie? It's here. Okay.
The whole last act. I'm not sure about that either. Look, culminates.
If you can find a more trainy movie that's good enough to put on a list.
Yes, I can.
Okay, so can I. I found six more. And it's all. But
if you can find seven, you're a better man than Wayne.
But let's just say here this, okay? when it comes to the Batmans that have been on, like, say, so the Robert Pattinson Batman versus this Batman versus the Michael Keaton Batman. Michael Keaton I love for nostalgia, but this one I love because it's fucking Christopher Nolan's Batman. This is almost...
You get an argument for me. This is my Batman as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, this is your Batman?
I'm too old to technically say that. I should be saying the 89 Tim Burton Batman, but nope.
But if you were a bitch like me who went to feel like you freaked out and it was like the whole part
you're
of
a much
life.
Bigger Batman fan. You're allowed to love what you love, and that's why this is just my particular choice.
There you are.
All right, my number six is the film which you alluded to earlier on, Wayne. I also don't remember a whole heap about it, if I'm honest. But I do remember thinking... I do remember thinking this film was way better than it had any right to be when I watched this way too young. It is, I'm not even going to try to say his name, some Russian dude director's film, 1985, Russian Runaway Train.
Ah, okay. Can't say I've seen it, Paul.
You haven't. So John Voight and Eric Roberts both got nominated for Academy Awards for this basic action thriller.
Eric Roberts?
Yeah.
Got nominated for an Academy Award?
Academy Award nominee, Eric Roberts.
Wow.
And John Voight. And it's hard to imagine John Voight being in a good film. Now, because it's been a lot of years and a lot of shit and a lot of anacondas between then and now.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Did you put Mission Impossible in this list?
No.
Okay, good. So I was going to say, so Mission Impossible, like John Voight in that, fantastic. Yes. May have been towards the end of his run, I'd say.
So basically, two guys escape from prison. They wind up, it's a horrible, miserable place in the middle of winter. So they jump on this train with Rebecca De Mornay, who's the female railway worker on it. They're being pursued by this vengeful head of security, and it's just a no holds barred escape piece. But it's dark and it's broody and it's more weighty than you would think. It's almost nihilistic, this particular film. So
really?
Yeah. And from my memory again, and I haven't seen this film in the last 25 years, is a lot of way better stunts than you would expect for this kind of film. So,
that's so? Yeah. So who did it again?
Oh, the director's name.
The guy. So yeah.
Yeah, the Russian dude.
Some Russian guy.
Andrei Konchalovsky.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Worth it. All right. Fantastic. My number six, this is a bit of a nostalgia pick, everyone. The film is called Throw Mama from the Train.
I don't think I've ever seen this movie.
What?
Yeah.
This was class Billy Crystal. So check it out, right? Billy Crystal is a writer, right? But he also teaches a writing class. He's suffering writer's block. He's trying to root someone because it's the 80s and there's always a female
because
lead.
He's a man.
Yeah. And also he's trying to root someone. And Danny DeVito, he is quintessential loser living with his mother. But his mother is a harried and old. Like that kind of shit, right? And the idea here
does
is
does she
that
say you're not James Bond, you know?
She doesn't, but...
Not suggesting your mum is Aaron. I'm just saying, like, no, but how cutting does it get?
If she was Asian, it's worse. To be honest, my mother never actually threw shit at me. So
well, no.
There you go.
I want to be clear here. Mrs. Aruza, not that you ever listen because would just be very unhappy with your son
if
you did.
No, no, she doesn't know. She's not Asian. So what happens is Danny DeVito says, hey, he thinks that he's made this deal with Billy Crystal where if you kill my mother, I'll kill the person that's annoying you. And
so it's, what's that Hitchcock
Crisscross,
film?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. I can't remember.
Strangers on a Train or something?
Something like that. Yeah, Strangers on a Train. It is Strangers on a Train.
That could have been the nomination for this list.
Yeah, but I haven't seen it.
Neither have I.
So it's Strangers on a Train and he's like doing this. So the idea here is that he's actually trying to force Billy Crystal while they're on a train to throw Mama from the train by killing her. And he's doing things like, listen, you don't have to throw her from a train. If you want to kill her, she's old. Just be vigorous. How you doing, Mrs. Smith? He's grabbing her and shit. It is really piss funny.
Sounds quite dark.
It actually is. And it was one of the first times where I was looking at, this is like an 80s movie, right? I'm watching it sort of as a kid pretty much going, what exactly is funny about this? And now this is where Billy Crystal was. This is around the Harry Met Sally.
Yeah,
his heyday, yes, for sure. But also I would argue Danny DeVito, we didn't really, because he's more of a producer than anything else these days, right?
Oh, yeah, now.
Yeah, but like it's a very broad he directed the film, right? And it's really, really great. Like it's a really wicked film. So Throw Mama from the Train, absolutely.
Check it out at some point.
Also, there's a person in his car, in Billy Crystal's class, who's writing a book and it's called 100 Girls I'd Like to Pork, right?
That's such a not now joke.
Billy Crystal goes like, what is this? He goes, it's a coffee table book. Chapter one, Sybil Shepherd. Chapter two. And it's just that, right? And it's a little...
So inappropriate.
But it's so funny. So you got to... trust me, if you watch the scene, you'll be fine with it, maybe.
My number five, Wayne, is a film. If it's not on your list, you'll be annoyed.
Go on.
It's a Duncan Jones film from 2011 starring Jake Gyllenhaal. It is Source Code.
Low.
Yeah, okay, good. I thought it would be here. So this is basically this soldier keeps waking up in the body of an unknown man and a bomb in a train. They drive along and the train keeps blowing up. And he realizes eventually he has to stop this bomb going off. So it's kind of a do it over and over and again.
It's a Groundhog Day
thriller. Groundhog Day thriller. And he's got 8 minutes to basically experience that person's life and save the train.
Yes. So the idea is that they have this technology where they can put someone's consciousness in someone else's body. Mm-hmm. And what's great about this film is you are watching essentially the same 8 minutes over and over for the whole movie, right? With a few interspersed bits where he's talking to Vera Farmiga through this like kind of like monitor. And you are, as the audience, you don't really know what's going on. You're finding out as it keeps going. Now, I remember watching this film with you and our friends, Paul. We went to the cinema when we were youngsters. And youngsters,
13 years ago.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, 2011. This film.
Wow, we were still in a place where we would go places like movies together. Not like now, when you never see anyone for 2 years and you have to start a podcast to fucking see your friend all the time.
Wait, so that was my fault.
No, I'm just saying this is how life is now. People have kids and stuff, yeah, right? Yep. So, we all went there, and it was like, it wasn't, in my head, it was like when you were in Carousel, where we would go there and go to Fast Eddie's afterwards.
Yep.
It wasn't that, right? But I remember not knowing anything about this film and being wildly impressed.
It was really good.
It was so good that towards the end.
Michelle Monaghan in it, one of your favorites?
Yeah, Mishmel. Mishmon, it would be.
To stop this shit.
Mishmon.
And by shit, I mean the podcast.
Well, no, here it is, right?
John Farnham Tour continues. Shut up, Carl.
I will say,
I'm going to say right now, the last episode is actually the top 10 references to John Farnham.
Oh, you're kind. All right, well, I will tell you this about Source Code. Back to the show for what it's worth. The end of this show actually kind of made me cry a bit. I tried to hide it from all the bitches we were with. And by that, I mean you. So,
wisely.
But it was a brilliant, brilliant film. And it's wildly underrated. If you haven't seen Source Code.
I would
agree.
I think it is underrated.
Totally underrated. Go get it. Go look
everyone
at it.
Talks about Duncan Jones' first film, Moon. I think it was his first film.
Man, fuck Moon. I was so bored with Moon. I was like, because I love Sam Rockwell. And I was like, oh, this will be good. Fucking it wasn't.
He doesn't dance. Wayne's like, fuck this shit.
Exactly. He's David Bowie's son. So great. But this was the shit right here.
And then the idiot made Warcraft. And we've not heard him since. Yeah.
Oh, they put him in movie jail.
Yeah.
He's David Bowie's son. Give him another turn.
Yeah, he deserves another chance. Just on genealogy alone. My number four is the older film.
I think it's my turn.
Oh, shit, it's you. Sorry, yeah. My bad. Yeah.
But it's okay because my number five is Unstoppable.
Hey! Wow, it is way up high on your list. My apologies for stepping on you there.
Hit me on four.
My number four is the older film on my list. Arguably the oldest film I've ever had on any list. It's from 1926. It's directed by Buster Keaton and Clyde Bruckman. It's called The General.
Fucking hell, you were scratching for this shit, motherfucker. You've seen it though, right?
Look, I watched this film because it's in the IMDb top 250.
There you go.
It's 4.2 stars on Letterboxd. It's 79 minutes, so it's short. That doesn't hurt. It is set during the American Civil War, and Buster Keaton plays this. A spy steals his beloved locomotive, the General.
Mm.
And so he chases in another train to get his train back.
Really?
And it is Stunt Fucking City, one of the most famous stunts of all time in this particular film.
Which one?
It's incredible. The train goes off the track, literally flies off the thing.
Oh, shit.
It is astounding for a film that is now almost 100 years old. It's wildly entertaining for what it is at its time.
Imagine being there seeing that stunt. Because there would have been no fucking safety guy. There would have been no fucking... It's just like, let's see if this shit works.
Yeah, and by the way, I think he's love's trapped on that train as well, so he's going to get her back too. So it's...
Another reason.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, just music. There's no sound effects, all that kind of stuff going on, but it's fucking great.
What's it called again?
The General.
The General.
Well worth a look. Most of these old Buster Keaton films and Charlie Chaplin films, I just give zero fucks about. They're not for me. This one was.
This one? Yeah. Really? Very good. Okay. My number four, speaking of old films, but nowhere near as old as yours, when I was a young man, one of the first few comedies I ever saw was this movie called Silver Streak. And it's
a
1976 film. The first time I had seen Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor together being comedians together. It's a joke, right? And what it is, it's about Gene Wilder is an overworked book editor. He's on this train, which is called the Silver Streak. In the 80s, it's like, it's a really nice train. And he gets
80s, 70s, you said?
76, sorry. Yes, you're right. So, but like to me, it was like, I saw it in the 80s.
Oh, sorry.
What happens is he witnesses a murder and Richard Pryor gets involved. This movie It starts like an old, I guess, 70s, but 80s movie. It sounds like what you would, Kramer versus Kramer.
I don't know what it's about.
It kind of looks like that, right? And Then it turns into this hijinks murder. For some reason, they both get guns and they start...
Really?
Yeah. Okay. They're shooting people and then the cops get involved.
So it becomes like a buddy action film.
It is a buddy action film, but it is funny. And there is one scene in the movie, and this is really like... Okay, again, couldn't do this today. But basically, they have to disguise Gene Wilder. So he just puts black...
Okay.
And he acts like an African-American, right? And he's doing the jive walk and this and that. He's talking about it years later where he said, this scene initially wasn't like that, where Richard Pryor looks at him and goes, oh, Jesus, I hope we don't run into any Muslims. And shit, like, you know, he does that kind of thing, right? Before that, it was just like he was acting like a black person and the white people were just accepting him as a black person. And Richard Pryor said, I can't do this.
Yeah, good on him.
And this is back in 76,
yeah,
remember,
good
right?
on him, yeah.
And they were saying like, and he actually went to Jill Wendell and said, you know, I feel really sad. Why I can't do this. I'm going to offend so many people. I'm going to actually make so many people sad. Can we? And they actually called the director and said, we need to do something different.
Yep.
Richard Pryor is the one who said, all right, if you walk out in that blackface, I have to now make fun of you as a white person trying to be black.
Yeah, I think that's...
And that will be okay, right?
All right, good, yeah. So I'm calling you out for it.
But this is the night before they shot it, and they had the writer come in the hotel room, and they just did this whole thing. And then Gene Wilder said, yeah, that's a better scene.
Arguably, two of the funniest people going around at that time, I'm sure it wasn't hard to find funny cracks to make about someone wearing blackface.
Exactly. But imagine, though, like... the sensitivity involved with that. Like, it's something that you... And 1976...
It's also nice to hear that everyone went, yeah, okay, Richard.
Absolutely. And Gene Wilder actually said that, look, this is why... There's an interview online where he's saying it, and because it's way back then, he's saying the N-word, like, to illustrate the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a really great film, though. It's a really interesting...
So, don't look for a remake of Silver Streak coming anywhere near to a theater near you.
Not even close. But
obviously, it sounds like it's not mostly set on a train, so nice bit.
This is really on brief, this nice. One.
It's nice when you hit it by accident occasionally.
Fuck you.
My number three then, Wayne, is the newest film on my list to go from the oldest to the newest.
It is
a pretty great film directed by a little guy named David Leitch, who might have just directed The Fall Guy, that stars one of the favourites around here, Brad Pitt. It is Bullet Train.
Bullet Train, yes. I knew you liked this one. Keep
Not
going.
On your list?
No.
Holy shit.
Okay, so in sort of hindsight... I have come
I know
to
you didn't
like
love it.
Yeah.
But I thought it would make your list low down, if I'm honest.
I know what you mean. It's definitely the most on brief film, and hence you might think it went there, but I knew you had it on your list.
Yeah, so I did. Like, yeah, and I do. And look, it basically follows he is an assassin and he's very, very unlucky, Brad Pitt. And he is hired to go after whatever it is, a briefcase or the like. Has a whole bunch of other assassins who have been sent there to kill whoever it is, mystery unfound unfolds from there. And they're all headed towards this particular meeting with this mythical underworld figure. And it's really fun and quite stupid, and there's some cool action in it as per a David Leitch film, and I found it legitimately funny and charming because Brad Pitt is both of those things. I don't know what your problem was with the film. I can't even remember.
I'm trying to remember it myself. I remember going, it's fine. I think, again, expectations are what kill you. I remember going, I expect this to be awesome because it's Brad Pitt, and yeah, he's dressed like a digital marketing coordinator, but he's actually but he's the hitman, this, that, whatever. There was good bits in it.
There were some bits that don't work for sure, like yeah, Brian Tyree Henry going on about fucking Thomas the Tank Engine.
That! I think I didn't like that idea, and I was like, eh. But the bit where they were like trying to be quiet in the carriage while killing each other, that was really good.
Yes, that was great. Joey King, Brian Tyree Henry, Aaron Taylor Johnson. Of course, Hiroki Sanada is a big character in it too. And Michael Shannon. So
Michael Shannon. I remember that.
Sandra Bullock, of course, Zazie Beetz and Sandra Bullock as his handler. We only hear her voice. Or does she pop up right
there? She does, I think, at the very end. Yes. Yeah. Just a quick side note. Is Aaron James Bond? Have we heard anything about
that? Nothing further.
So we don't
know. As far as I'm aware, nothing further.
Nothing official. Yeah. All right.
Not that my finger is on the pulse of all things James Bond.
Well, mine is, and I haven't heard a damn thing. But all right, there you are.
Yeah.
All right. My number three is a classic. It's from 1987, and it's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Paul, train is in the title.
Yeah, look, it is. Obviously.
There's also a plane in an automobile.
And so, in other words, this would be on Wayne's list of best car films, plane films, and train films.
No, the brief is, actually, you will find, Paul.
I can't remember this film well enough to know how much time was on it, so I left it off.
Let's just like quit justifying it because Paul's a cunt. And I will tell you now that...
What's the count up to, listeners? I'll let you keep score.
John Candy, Steve Martin. And why this film is good, it is essentially about these two guys trying to get home. Steve Martin's Thanksgiving. He's trying to get home to his family. He's got this lovely family. To be fair, the actual movie does not show much of his family, which I love, because it's all about the these two guys.
The journey.
The journey. And they're forced to sort of travel together. John Candy is purportedly the worst, most annoying, sort of disgusting dude to travel with. Steve Martin is the, you know, the avatar for the, oh, he's a decent guy or whatever.
He's the everyman.
He's the everyman. But what makes it, it's definitely an odd couple kind of thing, but they, the straight man nutball thing and the way they do it, they actually give you, the viewer, more reasons to want to see them together as the movie progresses. And towards the end, you genuinely love both of them together. Yeah, and you love John Candy.
My vague memory of this film is it does a really cool thing where at the very end, where whatever Steve Martin's character is, realizes this man's just lonely and trying to connect.
That's right. He's been lying the whole time. Yeah. He's like, shit. And he runs back when they're about to see and says, wait, you said you're going to get home to your wife, but you said I haven't seen her in fucking like 8 years.
And the wedding ring or something or other.
The whole thing. He's just a really, really sad guy. So he's like, you're coming with me. And he brings him to Thanksgiving. And even his family, who's this guy or whatever? And it just ends on a freeze frame of John Candy's face.
He's
happy to be there. Yeah. And it's just, I don't know what that moment is, but I felt the fuck out of it when I saw it.
Yeah, John Hughes.
John Hughes, man.
Yeah, gone too early. Very sad.
Definitely. So there.
Along with John Candy, for that matter. Yeah.
Surprisingly potent movie still, if you watch it.
All right. Clearly, you're not going to have, I don't think you're going to have my 201, or maybe you, no, because we know at least one that's coming up on your list.
Uh-huh.
Maybe two, actually, now. So you're going to have my number two, which is astounding to me. Actually, my number one is the most astounding of all.
Go on.
Number two is Snowpiercer.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about this, Paul, because remember when this came out, Bong Joon-ho, America.
Yep.
Other people.
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton, of course.
Fucking, what's his name? Jamie Elliott.
Yep.
Billy Elliott. Billy Elliott. Jamie Bell. William Hurt.
William Hurt. Look, I reckon if I saw this again now, I would, because I remember what I thought was like the idea of a train that travels around the world and has to keep going because the world's too cold.
So they tried to stop a global warming. Well, they did.
Yeah.
And they overly made it cold. So the world has gone into an ice age and the only way to survive is to keep moving. And somehow someone has developed this train that goes round and round around the world. The rich, rich people live in great comfort. There's a big class struggle. And at the back are the very poor people who are basically being, won't spoil it, let's just say exploited.
Yes.
And they decide to rise up and off we go.
Right. Now, this... And when I saw it, I remember being more impressed about it because the idea here is really the train is an avatar for class.
Yes.
Class warfare. And, you know, obviously the people in the back, they just get this jelly shit to eat or nothing. And Chris Pine has to fight his way to the front of the train. And then you find out things along the way.
Yep.
Ed Harris, right?
Yeah, Ed Harris.
Yeah. And so I don't know what it was, but when I saw it, I was like, I don't know why I didn't enjoy this film. I reckon if I watched it now at a different time, I'd probably have a great time with it.
Big fuck you to Nick Haskins. It's a really good time to mention live stream for The Cure that is coming in 3 weeks' time. Yes. And yeah, we're going to play a bit of a promo at the end of the episode today so you can get on board with that. But we're going to be featuring, as we do to wrap up, live stream for The Cure 8. Nick Haskins, the creator of that, has raised so much money for the fight against cancer. So wonderful man, genuinely excellent soul.
He's the shit.
However, has it wrong when it comes to this film because he cannot get past the fact that the train lines don't freeze and therefore the whole thing is fucking stupid.
Yeah. That is true, but it isn't my problem.
Full credit to him. That's exactly how I would think about a film I didn't like as well. So when you don't get on board with a film, no pun intended, you pick shit about it.
You know what I think it was? There's this moment where Chris Evans is talking about how horrible it is in the back of the train. Now remember, that means that the entire population of planet Earth
is on this train.
Is on this train, which means what? Not even 1,000 people?
I can't remember how much they...
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a TV series that followed. There's a TV series that followed on from this and has like Jennifer Connelly in it. And the like. And I watched the first season.
Ironically, I didn't mind. Didn't mind that at all. It was actually really good.
I haven't watched seasons. I think it's three seasons of it now. I haven't watched the next two. Just haven't got around to it. I should, but I think maybe 30 hours or 24 hours of this is probably too much. But 2.5 hours or 2 and a bit hours is perfect.
Well, there's a bit where Chris Pine is like, "I hate that I know what babies taste like."
And yeah,
I
was like, well,
fucking hell. It's got me.
It's a harsh film for sure, but I think it's an excellent film. And I'm very pleased it's made number two on my list.
Nice one. And speaking of number two, mine is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Part 2. Oh, part 1. Sorry, of course. Yes, of course. All right. Yeah, we talked about it already.
Yep. And you're number one, sir.
This is my one, but how about I give you my list back because we'll compare these ones. My number 10, Unstoppable. Number 9, The Midnight Meat Train. 8, Von Ryan's Express. 7, Dead Reckoning Part 1. 6, Runaway Train. 5, Source Code 4, The General. 3, Bullet Train. 2, Snowpiercer. And of course, without a doubt, with a bullet, my number one, one of the greatest films that we've seen in the history of this show, which I think I championed you to watch. So I'm disappointed it didn't
even
sneak its way onto your list, Wayne. Train to Busan.
Not bad.
The absolute quintessential best zombie film since Shaun of the Dead. By so far, it's not funny. Rips your heart out of your chest, this particular film. You feel so much. It's so well put together. There are so many tense feel sequences, most of which, in fact, almost the whole film is set on a train. So it meets the brief probably better than anything else that we've talked about today. So that's why it had to be number one. One of the greatest films, and it's all on a train.
You know, Paul, my lady friend recently went to Korea, and she said, oh, then we get to Busan. And I was like, are you going to take a train? And she said, the train to Busan, ironically, is a horrendous, like, long fucking train ride. And that's why most people don't do it.
Were there zombies on there trying to eat her?
See, that would have made it even worse. Bad. Exactly. She flew instead. But I was like, the point is she's been to Busan. That's something, right? So not bad at all. Not bad at all.
Sensational
and
film.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
My tender one goes number 10, Under Flaps 2. Number 9, Back to the Future, Part 3.
So... Can we just pause for a moment here?
Oh, fuck off.
And when you are doing your vote this week, ladies and gentlemen, when you listen to this episode, I want you to consider that Wayne put Steven Seagal above Train to Busan.
Hang on a second. I haven't seen Train to Busan.
Yes, you have. Did I make you watch it?
Nope.
Oh, in that case, fair enough. Strike that from the record. Carry on.
8, Sherlock Holmes, Game of Shadows. Oh, yeah. 7, Batman Begins. 6, Throw Mama from the Train. 5, Unstoppable. 4, Silver Streak. 3, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. 2, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. And my number one was Source Code, Paul.
Wow, okay.
Because I loved it right in the ass. So there you are.
That is a place to love something.
Yes. I do have a few HMs.
With permission.
Yes. Paul, we always say, we always assume it's with permission, okay? And who's to say it's not your own ass? There you go. So
if you can get down there.
It's a bit tough.
I'll tell you what, you're back. Must be super fucking flexible.
Doesn't have to be a tongue. It can be other things. You know what I put on honorable mention just for fun, Paul?
Oh, yeah, go on.
Trading Places.
Is there a train on that movie?
The whole third act of the movie is on a train.
Right.
There's no fucking like jumping off a bridge.
I got nothing. Shit, nothing. This is my 10. I was happy to get that far.
And then The Sting is a famous old movie with Robert Redford and stuff. There's quite a bit of train action on there as well.
Don't remember that either.
It's quite a bit.
All right, well, there you go. That's Alice. What about yours? Wrap up every episode of the show in a segment that we call The Pop 10.
Oh, what about Derailed with Jennifer Aniston? Remember that one with her and Clive Owen?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
But thanks. Anyway, Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Brent Wood, who said, Train to Busan, Snowpiercer, and Bullet Train. In other words, thank you for your vote, sir.
Paul, very assumptive. Very,
well, you know, his three were my top three.
Mean
well,
you
even, think, even in the same fucking order.
He might think you're a cunt.
4 times, ladies and gentlemen. Samuel Joseph, Train to Busan, Bullet Train, Snowpiercer. I have a feeling this is going to be quite a frequent comment. It should have been, Samuel. It should have been. Billy Dunham, the B-Diz himself from the We Watch the Thing and Time to Die podcast said, just to be different and to play loosely goosey with the brief. I think it was loosey goosey, not loosely goosely. Billy?
There goes that vote.
Well, it's clearly going to be you because it's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Word.
Dogma.
Oh.
And Unstoppable.
Nice.
Jason Barr said Train to Busan, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the original 74 one, not the John Travolta. I think it was John Travolta one.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mission Impossible. I know it's only the ending on a train, but it's a great ending. Yes.
Shh. I should have put Unbreakable on my list.
Unbreakable?
Yeah, remember
The train crashes.
Yeah, at the beginning. There you go.
Dear God, come on. Nick Orton said Unstoppable, Denzel, Von Ryan's Express, and Train to Busan. Mm-hmm. If this is not convincing you, Wayne, to watch Train to Busan, I'm not sure what will.
Might give it a try.
Brianna Petty said Train to Busan, obviously. Snowpiercer and Horror Express. Yeah, loving the horror there.
Brie likes horror. Okay.
Good on Brie. Thank you very much for that. Alex Zenos said Train to Busan, Source Code, and oh God.
What?
Under Siege 2.
Yeah, baby! That's how we do.
Chris Sutherland said, Train to Busan, Mission Impossible 1. And then he makes a joke, Snowpiercer. Oh, sorry, Hot Fuzz. There's a train at the start, lol. Or Snowpiercer. Catherine Guard said, Snowpiercer, Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. I'm sure there are more. My list is based purely on the fact that they're the only two that come to mind. I do Fair like enough. Them both, though, so yeah, it counts.
It's brilliant.
That's okay. We can allow that one through to the keeper. And then last couple, Drew Hallam, the Dungeon Master in Time to Die podcast said, these aren't my all-time faves, but I thought I'd throw in some good and different options no one's listed. Love it. If there's any man who can do that, it's Drew, who's seen about 45,000 billion films in the last 23 days.
Or should I say Drew Dat? Go ahead.
Howl, 2015 horror. Night Train, 2009 thriller. And The Commuter, 2018 action film with Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson's cock?
And his cock, yeah. Yes. And Ashton Harris said, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Bullet Train, and Wayne, Back to the Future, Part 3.
Yeah, boy.
Thanks to everyone. Look, I put that note out, like I said, with 90 minutes to go, and you've all responded. You are the absolute best. I'm sorry I didn't get through the other.
That's
I
think a it was lot like another 10 people. Like, yeah,
20 people responded inside 90 minutes. So well done to
we
all of you.
We have the best fans.
We absolutely do. Thank you so, so much to everyone who took the time. We really greatly appreciate it. Wayne, then how do the good folk get in touch with us? Or let us know their feedback on the show generally.
Google the Countdown Podcast. Find our socials. Join up. Be cool and merry. Also, send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com or visit the website, thecountdownpodcast.com.
I think Wayne's about covered it all except for on X. We're at the Countdown PC. Like and follow the show on Podbean where we host. Now, Wayne, next week then, episode 475, it's time. And as we like to do, right before we do one of these episodes, we like to check in with you. How many films, Wayne, do you need to watch next week for our top 10, last 10?
Only 7. But I'm nailing 2 this weekend. And then
that's only going to leave you 5.
It's fun a night for well, next
to
week.
To be fair,
it's
it is 8 days between now and when we record next.
See,
so
this is pretty fine. It'll be fine.
Plenty of time. It'll I have one. One I need to watch. I reckon I might get there slightly ahead of you.
I'm surprised. Usually you've seen 45 by this stage.
Been very busy. Very busy between work and playing Fortnite.
Oh,
so,
fair enough. So,
as
yes.
well as coaching netball, which is back now as well.
Very much. So that's the top 10. Last 10
episode 475. And next week we are, well, I'm very much looking forward to it because there might be some interesting ones on my list, at least. I don't know whether Wayne, what you've been watching, but we will get to hear about a particular Guy Ritchie film I know.
Oh, God, I'm seeing that tonight. And frankly, I want to come.
Okay, great. So, well, right. You can, if you want to come, just come. No. No, no. Let's not go there. Instead, let's wrap this one up. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name's Paul.
My name's Wayne.
This has been The Soundboard.
You're a cunt.
Fuck off, cunt.
You're a cunt now. You've always been a cunt. And the only thing that's going to change is you're going to become an even bigger cunt.
Eventually, it comes back the other way. We'll catch you next time. See ya.
See ya.
Dream of a world immune to cancer. Hello everyone, my name is Nick and I'm the host of the annual live stream for The Cure, where content creators and podcasters from around the world join me to raise money for the Cancer Research Institute and immunotherapy research, which is training the body's immune system to fight against all forms of cancer. Over the past 7 years, thanks to the power of indie podcasters and the indie podcasting community and listeners just like you listening to this right now, we have raised over $90,000. And as I record this now, the 8th annual live stream for The Cure is barreling down upon us really, really quickly in just about 2 weeks. So join us, please, from May 29th through June 1st for 48 hours of amazing content from people all over the world and help us fight for a world immune to cancer. And I'll return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Thank you so, so much. And together, we can make a difference.